This is an ode to internal combustion. This hour we hear Harleys, lowriders, and race cars. We hear the band Big Stick, a.k.a. Drag Racing Underground, and an opera called The Miracle of Cars. Hearing Voices from NPR goes into engine overdrive. This is Barrett Golding with a warning. We're going to be fast, loud, and out of control. We start with this recording by Paul Overton of these tractors at the North Carolina Antique Engine Show.
And finally, we take you to Nashville, Tennessee, and the NASCAR Nationwide Series race where Pastor Joe Nelms delivers one of the most unusual pre-race prayers you will ever hear.
Heavenly Father, we thank you tonight for all your blessings. You said in all things give thanks. So we want to thank you tonight for these mighty machines that you brought before us. Thank you for the Dodges and the Toyotas. Thank you for the Fords. And most of all, we thank you for Roush and Yates partnering to give us the power that we see before us tonight. Thank you for GM Performance Technology and the R07 engines. Thank you for Sunoco Racing Fuel and Goodyear Tires that bring performance and power to the track. Lord, I want to thank you for my smoking hot wife tonight, Lisa. My two children, Eli and Emma, or as we like to call them, the Little E's. Lord, I pray you bless the drivers and use them tonight. May they put on a performance worthy of this great track. In Jesus' name, boogity, 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 amen.
Hellfire and Drag Racing. A couple of singles from Big Stick, a.k.a. Drag Racing Underground.
It's exactly 8 o'clock and you're listening to me, Wild Girl. Yeah, that's the way we like it.
I started drag racing when I was 15. I went to my first drag race right after I turned 15 with my dad. He took me there and I guess just sitting in the stands and You know, when the top field cars go, your butt vibrates and you plug your ears and you smell the nitro.
But I'm excited. The crowds here are real good. We race here a lot at Englishtown, New Jersey. And the track here is always excellent.
So we're looking for bigger and better things out of this car. We hope to win here this weekend at Englishtown.
We had an engine explosion, and it blew a tire out, actually. So it was a pretty exciting run. And obviously wasn't a very good run, but fortunately it didn't tear the car up real bad.
We came here for the match race. We did set low ET, but we hurt some parts in the car. So we're really, you know, we're kind of like in a gray area right now. We think we know where we're going. We just hope we know how to get there.
Heads up, here it comes.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
Thank you, everybody. Let's go racing. It's the 34th annual Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach.
The Long Beach Grand Prix is one of the greatest events in Southern California. I love everything about it. I love all the great people that come by, the race cars, the noise, the whole atmosphere. That's why I come back here every single year. My kids have been raised on this event, and I would recommend it highly to anybody who's never been here for Long Beach Grand Prix weekend to make it a priority.
All right, can you feel it? Here comes the field.
I've been here since day one, never missed a race ever since 1977.
We've been coming to the races since I was probably 10 years old, and since then I've just been hooked. I used to live in Long Beach, and when we moved to Florida 5 years ago, I told my wife one thing is non-negotiable. I get to come to the Long Beach Grand Prix every year. I don't care if we're broke or anything. Long Beach, this is the Monaco of the United States.
The engines revving. It just gives me chills and goosebumps. I just love to be here.
Cars are my passion, dude. Ever since I was 5 years old, I've been collecting Hot Wheels cars. I like to go fast, man.
I took a day off from work because I'm a teacher. I needed a day off from my kids, and you know, it's a gorgeous day, Long Beach, California. What more could you ask for?
Watching guys go 200 miles an hour a couple inches apart, you got to be pretty talented to do it.
The way they like hold it super tight and then boom, come out of it and then whoo.
I love speed. I have a lot of speed tickets, so I love speed.
Every American imagines themselves in that cockpit of the race car, going fast, having a blast. You know, we all know we can do it. And that's why we love to watch it, because we can just envision ourselves racing the car.
And here they come. Here they come.
We're right by the shores of the Pacific Ocean. For 362 days a year, the travelers go down the street and use it as major thoroughfares. And for 3 days, it turns into a high-speed street race in downtown Long Beach, California. Jim McKillian, I'm the president and CEO of the Grand Prix Association of Long Beach, and what we try to do is we provide 3 days of entertainment. It happens to feature race cars going around the track, and that's the noise you hear and the vibrations you feel. The headline event is what we call Champ Car Racing, which are open wheel, open cockpit racing, just like they have at the Indianapolis 500. And then we have sports cars, Ferraris and Porsches in a different race. We have drifting competitions, which are cars sliding around the track. There's six races here in one weekend. So it is packed with racing activity from 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock in the morning. It's about a 2-mile circuit. We line it with concrete blocks and fence and safety equipment, so there's no chance of the cars going off and hurting anybody or doing any damage. Although we all like to think we can drive, these are really the masters at it, because you can't make one mistake. I mean, it isn't like in football or basketball or baseball, you get another swing or get to try to catch the pass again. If you make one mistake here of any major proportion, you're either into a wall, in the case of a street circuit, or in the case of a road circuit, you're going off into the woods someplace. You have to be fit. You have to have a tremendous concentration level, because you're on all the time, whether it's an hour race or 2-hour race. And you have to have the hand-eye coordination. You have to have a lot of dexterity.
My
name is Mario Dominguez. I am a race car driver, and I race champ cars. I'm racing here at the Great Long Beach Grand Prix this weekend. I think I was born with gasoline in my veins because nobody ever told me to race. No, I don't come from a family of racers, and all I ever wanted to do since I can remember was to race cars. I cried to my father for like 3 years, every single day for him to buy me a go-kart. Finally, when I was 10, he accepted. He bought me that go-kart, and he said, this is it. I'm never buying you anything faster. And that year, I was national champion in Mexico, and then he liked it. So then he was spending whatever it took for me to have the fastest go-kart possible.
Okay, I'm Simona Di Silvestro. I'm from Switzerland, and I'm driving in the Atlantic Series. It's a really cool street course, so I'm enjoying it a lot. And, you know, the time is really close. We're like in 6 tenths the first 12 drivers, so it's really competitive.
Hey man, just drive it like you stole it.
I'm Lucias from Mexico. I do it because it makes me feel alive. I cannot imagine my life without doing this. I love every place that we go. I love meeting people. They really make a difference when you're inside the car risking your life. When you need to risk a little bit more, sometimes you do it for them, and it's pretty special.
Long Beach Grand Prix was recorded by myself and Joe Skyward. Pastor Joe Nelms delivered that pre-NASCAR race prayer. And you heard a couple cuts, Drag Racing and Wild Girl, from Big Sticks Hot from the Strip. This is Hearing Voices in Engine Overdrive. We switch now from four wheels to two. Here's Amy Borkowski from Amy's Answering Machine, Messages from Mom.
Amela, I just talked to you. Where did you go? Anyway, I forgot to tell you. I was watching the news, and they had a story about the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club, and they flashed a shot of a big bear of a guy from Greenwich Village who was covered in tattoos, and on the back of his motorcycle was a very pretty girl. And I meant to ask, was that you? She had your hair, and she was wearing a green blouse that looked like the one I gave you for Hanukkah. I'm hoping it was just a coincidence, because you know how I feel about motorcycles. Do me a favor, Amy. If you have such ants in your pants, like you want to go for a ride, it can be just as exciting to go in a cab. Okay, keep your wits about you, honey. Bye.
Well, I guess my earliest recollection of riding, I was about 10 or 11 years old. I was in the back of my father's car, and there was a fella. Still remember his name. His name was Donnie Plumridge. Donnie Plumridge had a big green panhead, and he pulled up behind my dad's car, and I was all eyes. And as we turned off, he waved to me, and I thought that that was just the greatest way for a guy to live in the world. And from then on, I always wanted a Harley Davidson. If you were a pirate or a cowboy with no ship and no horse, well, the next best thing was to get a Harley Davidson and be a biker, you know?
Boy hangs on to this mastodon from hell, and those side pipes burn leftover leaves that are not ready now for summer's rake. Do not give me any of that Zen and some art of motorcycle maintenance stuff. Just ride your bike, and if it is not a Harley Davidson, then maybe you should. Just to fix it to where the sun don't rise any place except through those rust holes upon foreign designs stuck out on American roads.
The feeling of mastery, you know, of domination, of being in charge of something that if it gets away from you, you don't have a chance of getting it back into control. It's rumbling and you feel like, you know, you're inside of it. You get that big rumbling monster between your legs and you can feel it throbbing. And, you know, it's not like you're part of it anymore. It's like it's consumed you. Like my big stroker. Take somebody for a ride. I got a rigid frame. You take a woman for a ride and she's going to get some stimulation out of that whether she wants to admit it or not.
These Harley women straddled their choppers with lustrous precision, and when packing behind you with hands tucked under the belt buckle at your waist, a man rides amidst powers of awesome potential, and the bike actually lathers like a stallion bulging at that barn door.
Because when you're on the passenger seat, you're not in control. You're totally dependent on the driver. And I don't know, I guess as a person who has a lot of control in other aspects of their life, which I do, I guess there's a sense of that. Yeah, the lack of control there that excites you.
This feeding frenzy will not last. Dentists,
mainstream
psychotherapists and psychiatrists,
prosperous
lawyers,
trendy,
buy these things and they go wobbling out of the parking lot.
Wannabes.
They don't know what they have. It really is shrink wrapping a tradition. Shouldn't be shrink wrapped.
A Frenchman recently criticized the U.S. He said, America is a wasteland, a cultural desert. You people have no culture, he said. None. The only things you've given the world are rock and roll and Harley Davidsons.
Yeah, well, that might be the case. Then again, what more do you need?
The audio composition Harley was by Steve Wadhams of the CBC, with poem by Martin Jack Rosenblum. It's off the collection Sonic Circuits 4. This is Hearing Voices with musician recordist Chuck Jahnke and his CD Hog, Sounds and Music of the World's Greatest Bike. Coming up, a dragumentary, an opera about automobiles, and a salt flat speed record set by a sexagenarian. That's in a minute when we continue in Engine Overdrive on Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
Wendy Mae Chambers with New York, New York, played on car horns. This is Hearing Voices shifting into Engine Overdrive. We got the band Big Stick with their brand new dragumentary right after another message from Amy Borkowski's mom.
Hi, Amala. It's me, honey. If you haven't already left to go to the Motor Vehicle Bureau, keep in mind that the wait is very long. So before you get in line, you may want to empty your bladder. All right, honey? That's all for now. Bye-bye.
What are you doing down here with Daddy's car at the drag strip?
Well, this is a 1977 Cadillac, one of the world's fastest street cars. The world's fastest. Well, it's got a 1967 Oldsmobile motor, 455. Everybody proud of this car. We've never seen a big car like that one. And he really got it going fast.
It's a 68 Camaro. It's a street car. It's got a 615 cubic inch motor, single four barrel, one on gas.
It runs a bow tie block, 509 with a Chevy head. It's running a 1471 blower.
Hey, what are you doing?
I started out in a 65 Mustang. Today I'm in an alcohol finny car that's powered by ethanol.
We have come out of the alcohol flashes into the nitro. It's going to be a fuel car from now.
2024 top fuel cars competing for the 8 spots in qualifying. These vehicles, typically you don't know how they're going to react or what they're going to do next.
The car through the lights kicked out number 5 rod. Oiled it down on the tires and oiled it up. And I was just holding on then. And you see fire coming in the car and you wonder how you'll deal with it. And I'll tell you,
these cars are some of the hardest cars to drive.
And I literally shake for about 10 or 15 minutes after each run, but it's all the adrenaline rush.
The adrenaline rush is unbelievable, man. Just, you know, the sound, the smell, just my passion is so deep for it.
Hey, what are you doing?
What are you doing down here with that car track trip?
Yeah, it's a car I built myself. The first car I had didn't have no headlights in it, and he said it didn't have no eyes. It looked like a zombie. They're just painted silver. No headlights in it.
It is very humid today.
There's 90% in here in the car.
Hi, friends. Jack Port here, owner and super operator of Jack Port Volkswagen, the largest Jack Port Volkswagen this side of Babylon. Well, as you know, we're in the midst of our giant cleanup sale, and while Rex is in the back cleaning up the Giants, and oh, they do get dirty, let's just take a look at this beautiful, brand new 1969 Volkswagen Squareback Station Wagon. Friends, this car is loaded with extras. As you can see, there's some extras in the back right now, and I think they're all loaded.
Hi, Jack. I got some film on me.
I can ride a horse, man.
Hey, man, what happened to my toe?
It's way to the crowd.
See, talk about economy. Talk about convenience. Talk about the prolegomena to any future metaphysics. Come in, we'll talk about anything. So just hop on a friend of your choice and come north. On the Pasadena Freeway to the Avenue 60 turnoff. Go right on Avenue 60 to Figueroa, 5944 Figueroa. There we are. Jack Port Volkswagen in Highland Park, where smoke is not a problem or a way of life. Thank you, friends. And now back to our movie, Hercules Meets the Electric Phoenicians.
Well, I always wanted to fix me up a car outdoor rider, no? When I barely got this car, it was all original, no? Like this. It had the original rims and everything. Okay, the first time I got it, no? I went and took it for them to melt the springs. Anyways, that when I ended up taking it over there, I ended up telling them to just melt them all the way, no? They get a torch and they burn them, no? And the car just ends up going down by itself. And then I wanted to dress it up, no, with the rims right here. And once I put them rims, it just went all the way to the floor. But I really had to do this right. I took off the metal from right here, no? Like when everybody started lowering it, no? I took it to somebody to melt the spring, no? And now lately, the way I lower them is I take off the springs on the back and I let it go all the way down. That way I have more of a bounce. Because I like him to bounce, no? It's got a little rubber that hits on the frame, and I like the frame to hit on that, so it can really bounce on that. And when I barely lowered it, it right away went like that to me, you know? Like, hey, wake up, it's time, you know, it's time to get ready, you know what I'm saying? So then when I was driving on the road, I had to pay more attention on what I was really doing. Like, what I noticed is that, you get more wiser, you start paying attention to a lot of things. You gotta recognize the road. That way when you're going through the road, you gotta know where to turn and where to go so you won't hit the bumps. This is the original color right here, the bike. Except the thing is, when I did this car myself, at that time I was real younger, no? And I didn't know nothing about painting, right? And the way I painted this, it was painted with spray paint can. And then this one, this pattern right here, all of these ones right here, I used to go to the store and buy the spray paint, and it was, I don't know, real thin paint, you know, that you can see through it. And the way I started with this, I'll throw all this silver on the bottom. And anyways, that's the way I did it, you know. I got some spray can, and I painted all this, everything right here, all around right here, silver. And then I got the maroon paint, and I just started spraying it all like that, you know. At that time, I didn't know how to shoot paint, you know. So I just did my, I don't know what happened, I just set my mind and it just came out natural, no? So then from there, what was the hard part for me is that every time I had to go to a car wash, I couldn't wash it. Because the car wash has so much pressure that I was to spray like that and the paint would peel. Like on this one right here, from here to here, there's a silver on the bottom. And then from right here, I threw that outline. Just with a can like that, as even as I could, no, just with my hand, like that, and then like these lines right here, I got a plate, and I put it like that, and I just go on step, and then right in here, it was silver, no, and this right here is the blue, and then from there, once I did all that, then I get the spray can, and I go even through the top of everything, so I could blend everything up, and nothing but imagination, with a plate right here, and the can right here. And I held it as good as I did, and I didn't have a shop or anything. I just did it like out here, right here, and I'll just go like that, no? The reason I did it on my own is because I always wanted to put my own art, no? And if I take it to somebody, they won't do it the way I really wanted, the way I really imagined it, no? And what I really wanted to do, I really wanted it to really stand out when I'll take it out to town. And it started brightening me up, no? And then every day I try and figure out something to put into it so I could make it stand out more, no? Anyways, that what I did, when it started getting dark around 7, I slapped on some little lights over here in the back, right here in the back inside, and in the front. And I'll throw on the switch in the nighttime, bro, the lights will be shining right into the rim. And the wheels would be right here. You know, and especially in the nighttime, it looked like a carnival. You know, this car, you know, it looked like the, you know, you see a carnival with all them lights. And I ended up selling the car. I mean, I ended up painting it jet black. Anyways, right now, the same day that I changed the color on it and I went to town, I noticed that it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same thing. It wasn't the same feeling. Like I got put down. Like what I mean is like I didn't feel confident on it. It looked nice and everything, but I noticed that people look at it more the other way around. No? You know what I mean? And when I be riding around town, you know, and they'll tell me, "Is that you? Is that you?" I felt real down because I couldn't find the paint to do it the original way, no, like the way I really wanted it. No. Anyways, that I sold it. And I sprinted it back, jet black. And then I started noticing to myself, I said, no, well, I'm going to fix me up another light, no? I don't want to tell you a lie. I went in through around 20 cars. I had 2 Continentals, 3 Cadillacs. I went through a whole lot of cars, no? And I couldn't get the right feeling for it. Like this one, no? And I'd be over here thinking, I told my girlfriend, I told her, you know what? I don't feel myself anymore, you know? And she'll be snapping. She'll tell me, you know what? I've been noticing that you're not you anymore. You're not, like, you need that car, she told me. Like, there was something with you and you're right, no? Anyways, that I sold around 20 cars. I bought me around 20 cars. I sold them, and every single car, I fixed it up. And I lowered it, and I didn't feel good. And I said, nah, I gotta get that car. And I tried to get me another car like this one, no, identical, no? And I couldn't find me one. And I said, nah. I said to myself, that will bring it to me. It's coming from way over there, and it's going to finally get over here, and I'm going to have to find the original car. And what happened with me is that when I sold this car, I said to myself, I could get another ride exactly like it, no? But then I went through all those cars, and it wasn't the same feeling. So I said, if I can get me another car, the same thing, I know it's not going to be the same. Anyways, that one day I was over here at the house, just kicking back, no? And one of my friends comes over here and tells me, you know what? He tells me, what? I found your car, he goes. I said, what are you talking about? And he told me, no, you're not going to believe this, he said. And I told him, I think I know what you're talking about. And he said, yep, I found it, but it's all messed up. And I told him, I don't care. Show me where it's at, and I'm going to get it back no matter what. He went and showed it to me, and when I look at it, You know how it freaked me out? I saw that car and I said, man, my car is last, and as last as it's been, that's how last I've been. Like I saw it like that, and as down as you do, that's how down I felt, no, by myself. And I ended up, and I said, no, I'm gonna get it. I got it, no. It was all messed up, and it took 7 years to get it back. 7 years. By all those 7 years till now, out of all those cars that I went through, I painted them and I learned how to paint with the right machine, with a real machine, no. So from there, I said to myself, I come over here and I look at this and I said, nah, there ain't no spray can no more. Now I'm going to do the whole thing pure natural. So I painted it white. I seen out all the dents. I threw all that. And then I ended up bringing my car back with the way I have it. I still have it. From there, I started being more myself. I started feeling more confident. And I started dressing up back the way I used to. And I wanted to blend in with my ride, no? What I'm gonna do to this car now is I'm gonna throw a mirror right here in the back, right here, on the windows right here, in the front windows. All the way I'm gonna do the etching on this window right here, because the windows were broken when I got it, and I gotta do all that. And I'm gonna fix up the interior, and I'm gonna fix it up exactly the way I used to have it. The name I'm gonna put on it is Lowrider Heaven.
I had looked to the side, and you know, there's the entrance coming to Chimayo from Espanola. And I just like saw his car and I fell in love with his car right away. And a couple weeks later...
Not me.
No, it was you.
The car, but I'm
me. Later, there's a place in Espanola, it was called the Roller Disco, and I used to like to skate a lot. And I had seen him there and I was following him all over, just like getting that perfect glance of him. And I was telling my friends that I really liked that guy, you know, and anyways, the Roller Disco had finished that night, and I went outside and I saw the car again, and it was him in that car, and he had all his friends with him, and right there, that's where we like met, and from there on, we just started going out, and I was so happy because I told him that I loved his car. It wasn't just for his car, it was him.
That's an excerpt from The Miracle of Cars, Act 2 of the 1994 opera Now Eleanor's Idea by Robert Ashley. The voices are Arthur Lolo Medina and Joanne Martinez. That Jack Poet Volkswagen ad is the Firesign Theater from 1968. And you heard Big Stick's new Dragumentary. Big Stick is John Gill and Yana Trance with Tom Timko playing sax. This is Hearing Voices. This is Ruby Shorten's Dragsters with Bonneville Beat, which is where we're headed, the Bonneville Salt Flats, to hear a land speed record get broken by Betty Berkland, a 63-year-old grandmother from Great Falls, Montana. But first...
I bought a car I could feel one with. A car that was responsive to me. Hugged the road. Responded when I put my hands on her wheel. My best friend Larry wanted to take her for a spin. I trusted Larry. I said, sure, why not? Have fun. The next thing I knew, I caught them alone in my garage. Larry had his hand in a glove compartment, said he was looking for the tire gauge. My car was no longer hugging just for me. She was hugging for Larry, too. I heard about this happening between a man and his car, sometime at 5 years or 50,000 miles, whichever comes first. There was a scene. I threatened to trade her in. She said she'd like that. Maybe she'd wind up with a 16-year-old, someone who'd drive her long and hard. We started drifting apart. The last I heard, she was having her tires rotated by a grease monkey somewhere in the Mojave Desert.
Infidelity.
I hope she's happy.
At last, a car that's as faithful as you are.
If you're not nervous about driving a car at Bonneville, then you're not looking at reality. You should be nervous. It should not be something you do lightly. They almost got to be Hemis. The Chevys and the Fords don't impress me that much, but the Hemi engines, that'll get me charged. If you have to crash a car, you want to do it in a race car that's built to crash, and at the Salt Flats where there's nothing to hook or to tear. I mean, you can roll and slide and whatever. I knew as soon as I took off that something was wrong with the car. It didn't sound right. I didn't have any throttle, but I thought, it's a record. I've got to just try to recover. And there was this huge pop, and I could see orange, and I thought, uh-oh, I got a fire. I got out. They started taking the hood off, and there was fire under the hood. They're calling me Flamin' Betty. It's a big deal to build a car and put all your heart and soul into it and then let somebody else drive it. That's a big deal.
The record's 250. He says all you gotta do is go 251.
I just know how to make them go fast. As a kid, when you got on a slide, a big one, with the loop in the middle and all that, you look at it and think, do I really want to do this? And yet when you do it, you get to the bottom and, wow, that was fun, let's go do it again. That's the thing. It's partly the thrill of doing it, partly the thrill of knowing that you did it. And then there's the little thing of knowing that you stepped a little past your comfort zone and survived and it was fun. I want my grandkids to know they can do anything they want to. The sky's the limit. If you want to do it, and you seriously want to do it, you can do it.
Middle mile, 265.997. That qualifies on a 250 record.
I want to quote our good friend Brett Kepner. He wrote a story about Cleo Chandler in this issue of the IHRA Drag Review. Cleo Chandler just recently, she's 77 years old.
Yeah,
she runs stock, and she just added an IHRA AEA All-Pro Winter National Championship to her ever-growing list of accomplishments. And in this article about Cleo's win recently, there's a little life lesson here, and I thought I might read something from this while we're on the subject. I'll read fast, but this is definitely an incredible story. And Brett says here, within the story of 77-year-old Cleo Chandler's resounding win at Darlington is a lesson for every person on the planet. Held deeply within the round-by-round triumph and hidden behind the facade of a championship racing event is a statement about life and the determination of a single human being to live life to the fullest extent of her beliefs and abilities. Now, this is the deal. The sport of drag racing holds a very special position in the realm of amateur or professional endeavors. The sport is remarkable in its total lack of prejudice. Unlike virtually any other pursuit, it cuts across every social strata and makes no judgment on race, creed, physical, emotional, or financial status. From its earliest days, drag racing has embraced every enthusiast equally. For all who share the desire or addiction to compete, the sport judges only in terms of victory and defeat, with no pretext or excuse. It is the last bastion of equality in sport. It is a world within itself where all strive for a single goal, and any single person can achieve it. While Cleo's very existence stares society's intolerance in the face, her win at the Winter Nationals came as no upset to those within the sport. Her past wins in WCS competition and her unforgettable $5,000 victory in the 1990 Lunati Cam Stock Shootout, the richest payoff in the division's history, in which she defeated three straight world champions outright with one perfect .500 reaction time, more than proved her abilities before March 16, 1992. Cleo Chandler is a champion drag racing driver, but more importantly, Cleo Chandler is an example to every person who sees what Cleo portrays as second nature. In a world that stresses every individual's limitations, Cleo is living proof that there are no limitations. She is the embodiment of every single person's dream, that anyone can accomplish anything in the face of any odds. That goal can only be reached by following Cleo's exquisitely simple example of pursuing that goal with conviction, determination, and belief in oneself to push past society's self-imposed limitations. Equally important is Cleo's statement of what life can be when one ignores the narrow-minded who permeate the society in which we live. It becomes, quite simply, life as it was meant to be lived, and every one of us can only hope that after 7.5 decades of life, we have learned enough to be strong enough to live our lives as Cleo Chandler does. Thanks, Cleo, for showing us what we so often overlook.
Amen.
And finally, one of the most unusual pre-race prayers you will ever hear.
Heavenly Father, we thank you tonight for all your blessings. You said in all things give thanks. So we want to thank you tonight for these mighty machines that you've brought before us. Thank you for the Dodges and the Toyotas. Thank you for the Fords. And most of all, we thank you for Roush and Yates partnering to give us the power that we see before us tonight. Thank you for GM Performance Technology and the RO7 engines. Thank you for Sunoco Racing Fuel and Goodyear Tires that bring performance and power.
Speed one head on it, 456 gear in the back, got a 455 gear load in it, and it runs good. Like I said, I said to be in the car.
You better not be spending no money on no race car.
It's a stock setup car, stage one head on it, 456 gear in the back, got a 455 gear load in it, and it runs good. Like I said, it'll be in the car.
You better not spend no money on no race car. You better not spend no money on no race car.
It's a stop.
466 gear in the back, got a 455 gear bolt in it, and it runs good. Like I said, I said to be in the car tomorrow.
You better not be spending no money on no race car.
It's a stock setup car, got a stage one head on it, 456 gear in the back, got a 455 gear bolt in it, and it runs good. Like I said to be in the car tomorrow.
You better not be spending no money on no race car.
Big Stick, don't you spend no money on no race car. And Pastor Joe Nelm's prayer was songified by the Gregory Brothers. That's those auto-tune the news guys. Wild Girl, again, from Big Stick's Hot from the Strip. And Jesse Boggs did Infidelity. This music is by Jeff Arnson. It's the same we used for the Betty Berkland story. In 2003... At 63 years old, she set a land speed record in a Class E supercharged coupe going 263 miles per hour. The interview and sounds were recorded by James Kehoe for the film Return to Bonneville. Big Stick hangs out at dragracingunderground.com, and there's links to everything you heard at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of SoundImagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is HearingVoices.com.